Hello and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Alex Agunas. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's super to talk to you again. So Alex is a freelance writer, a co-host, and online blogger at No Direction, and he runs his own third-party publishing company. Alex, can you tell me a little bit about how you got started as this internet media mogul that you are now?
Oh, let me think. So way back in the day, I think it was 2014, maybe 13. I was at the time GMing a game for like a bunch of my best friends since like high school. And so like we had this really long, intricate game. And then that game got put on pause for like a year because two of them were getting married. We knew it was happening. They were dating for a long time. And them getting married meant like, oh man, we got to plan everything wedding related. And like basically their entire social life stopped for a year. It's not like common for like married people to do that, but like it's also not uncommon based on the scope of the wedding. So I didn't see them for a year, and I was at the time really concerned that I was going to lose like my edge as a GM. So what I decided to do to keep sharp was to basically start writing a blog, and that blog was just called Everyman Gaming. And so I started like writing guides for like how to make challenging encounters, and I did character builds using the Pathfinder first edition rule set, and eventually I ended up catching the attention of Ryan Costello and Jefferson J. Thacker from No Direction. They had like a question or something about like the math on like one of the live episodes I was watching, and so I linked my blog article on their Twitch, because it was like right around when they were first starting to do live episodes. And they went and they read it and they were like, this is really good. We should get this guy. And so they kind of were like, hey, do you want to join the network? And I think that was like in March, and we sort of built up like how everything was going to work with my transition into No Direction Network. And I made the jump in July of that year. We brought all my blog articles over from the original Everyman Gaming site and brought them into No Direction. And then like that August, I started a special event where I just did like all psychic stuff, because I think Occult Adventures just came out or something like that. And so that sort of started me. And around like the following January, Ryan came to me and was like, hey, you know, I do Private Sanctuary. I don't think I have the bandwidth for this anymore. You know, I think he had just had his daughter at the time, where she was very young. And he asked me to take over Private Sanctuary. So I started doing that with Anthony Lee and myself. And then that transitioned into doing No Direction Beyond when Starfinder came out with Jefferson J. Thacker and James Ballard. And so things just kind of kept like chugging along. It's like a snowball falling down a hill, really.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. So you talk about how they learned about you through your blog. So they never even heard you talk see how gregarious you were even. And so that's like an added bonus. It's like, here's the guy that knows this stuff, is good at writing. Oh, and you know what? He's a very captivating speaker, too. He's the full deal.
Yeah. I think that's why they eventually ended up putting me on the podcast.
Right.
Because, like, they had me on a couple episodes, like, at different points as, like, a guest. In the early days, and they were like, wow, he's actually good at this. I was like, my degree is in elementary education. I have my master's in applied behavior analysis. So I have a lot of training in how to get in front of the crowds and be captivating. I wouldn't call myself a public speaker, but like I can at least entertain a crowd of 10-year-olds. And isn't that what we all are deep down?
Well, you know, it's funny. So I myself, I'm a teacher as well, and I actually feel like I do a lot of performance because I'm a college professor, and these are people that are paying to be there, and the price of their ticket is actually pretty expensive. So I feel like, man, I have to provide not only, you know, the education requirement, but also pretty high entertainment value in order to keep them coming back. So,
with the little guys, they don't get a choice, but if you don't entertain them, and pay attention to you. It's kind of like the opposite problem.
Right. No, for sure. So, hey, can you tell us a little bit about the writing you've done, especially for Paizo? You know, when I met you at PaizoCon 2 years ago, I was mm-hmm. just amazed at how much work you had actually done in the Starfinder Core rule book. What kind of stuff have you done overall, and how did you get started there?
So, me being a Paizo writer is sort of like a direct byproduct of work I've done for third party beforehand. Mm-hmm. My first project that I ever did was for a company called Radiant House. I am one of the co-authors of the Pack Magic Unbound series mm-hmm. and its compilation, Grimoire of Lost Souls. And so I did like the first two volumes of the Pack Magic series, and I'm working for Raging Swan Press, which is a third-party company that's run by Craigington Broadhurst. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I was like, hey, maybe I'm good enough to try. And so I was a really, really dumb freelancer. I'm sure that you're going to hear people that are like amazing in these interviews that like, you know, got noticed, and people like, oh, I really want you to write for me. Like, no, that's not me. I messaged Wes Schneider, and I did it in the worst possible way possible, like ever. I am so embarrassed by what I did. I went on the Paizo forums, and I found him, and I sent him a private message on the Paizo forums, like a complete novice, and said, hey, I'm interested in writing for you. And like, this is before the forums weren't like so, they weren't to the point where people still came onto them a lot and right, were very positive right. at the time. So like, I got lucky. Like if I tried that now, I don't know if they would listen to me. I don't know if they would check. But in any case, like he was like, yeah, send me some samples and do this and that. And I sent him, and he was like, I'm going to give you to Patrick Rennie, and you know, he can talk about getting you an assignment. And so like, I ended up writing the magic items in Giant Hunter's Handbook, the player companion. Mm-hmm. It was my first job. And from there, like, I kept getting player companions, and it worked out because my second job was the first project after Patrick ended up leaving. He, I forget where he went, but he moved to like another country or something and left Paizo. And so at that time, Owen Casey Stevens stepped in and took over the player companion line. Mm-hmm. And he ended up developing the work I originally did for Patrick. I believe it was in Monster Summoner's Handbook was that one. Mm-hmm. I think that was Owen's first one. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on it 100%.
I'll ask Owen to see if he remembers that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so but that was like the first, he was like, hey, this is pretty good. And then so what ended up happening from that was the next big job I did for Owen was the Weapon Master's Handbook. And that's probably like the one Paizo thing that like a lot of people who know my body of work, they're like, oh my gosh, I love this. I'm hoping that yeah. changes with Character Operations Manual,
right,
but
right.
like everyone tells me how much they love weapon trainings in that book. And what's funny about that one is like Owen asked me and one other freelancer to do that project, and we only had 2 weeks to do it because of a complication in house. And the wow. 2 weeks we had, one of them was Gen Con.
Wow, man.
So I had to write something crazy, like 15,000 words over a course of 2 weeks while I was at Gen Con. It was very tough. And when I was able to turn that in on time, I got a lot of street cred in Paizo.
Yeah,
I'm
for sure.
Pretty well known I'm pretty well known amongst the Paizo developers for my my ability to very much use the language that they use. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as important in second edition as it is in first edition. Mm-hmm. But in first edition, like being particular with how you word things was very, very important in order to make sure that the rules interactions worked correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And really all I did was I went back and I found examples of things that kind of did what I wanted. And I used Paizo's own language as my sort of my benchmark for how I wrote my rules.
Mm-hmm.
And they really liked it because it meant that in most cases I was accurate and I was easy to edit. There are some examples of feats and stuff that I've made that like they have not been great. I've made mistakes, believe me. But for the most part, like that's been my strategy and my brand, and I've been doing pretty well with it. Well, that's one of my brands.
Yeah. So what are the things have you said you wrote quite a bit for the COM, and I know also the Starship mm-hmm. Operation Manual. Can you talk yes. about what you wrote in the Character Operation Manual and then maybe a high level of Starship, because I know you can't talk about the specifics there.
Yeah, I can't talk a whole lot about the Starship Operations Manual. I'm still under NDA for that one.
Right.
I can talk very broadly about it, and that's mm-hmm. about it. But in terms of COM, I can say whatever I want to get
sure.
the books out. Actually, I did I'm on No Direction Beyond, and we did like a deep dive of what's in the book, and like there's literally a segment where I'm like, I wrote that. I wrote yeah. that. this is mine. I did it. My baby. Mm-hmm. Because what ended up happening with Character Operations Manual, that's Owen Casey Stevens' last major project for Paizo that he was like in charge of.
Right.
There, Starship Operations Manual is one that he outlined and gave out to freelancers, but he left before it was finished, so it's not developed by him. Mm-hmm. He considers COM to be like his final, like major piece of Starfinder contribution to the official body.
Mm-hmm.
And when that book came out, one of Paizo's long-term goals is to try to get as many people, and specifically as many diverse people as possible, right, into writing for games.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to bring a whole bunch of new people into COM, but when you're looking at authors who've never written at a game before, a new author takes a lot more energy to develop than someone who is experienced. So basically their battle strategy for COM was, hey, we're going to get as many different people as we possibly can who have never written for Paizo before and maybe have never written for role-playing games before in on this book because we want their diverse viewpoints and their diverse knowledge of the rules so that we can make a book that has been like, it's something that comes from all different walks of life and experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if we're going to do this, we also need to make sure that some of this book is actually easy for us to develop. So we're just going to give all these words to Alex. And I ended up walking away with 24,600 words in that book. And
wow.
I know that doesn't mean anything to the average listener. For reference, a typical Paizo page is about 700 words.
Mm-hmm.
And my body of work is in that from every section I've written in that book is actually larger than any of the classes, which mm-hmm. means that but in terms of like single authors, I think I've contributed a little bit more than anybody else. I think the only person who came close was the person who wrote The Vanguard. Mm-hmm. I think The Vanguard is like 23,000. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying that is like a brag, but like, it's more like, this is the scope of the amount of stuff I put into
right.
this book. It
right.
is a lot.
Did they do two waves with the COM like they did for the summer?
No, they did two waves with Starship.
Yeah.
With COM, it was one wave.
Okay.
With COM, I needed to have like all of that done in about a month. And
right.
it was a very tricky month, but it was actually pretty good because at that point you're expanding on a game that already exists. It was mm-hmm. a lot easier than when I wrote the equipment chapter in the Starship,
right.
the Starfinder core rulebook, because mm-hmm. that was, how am I going to make sci-fi stuff when nobody's done this in like 10 years?
Right. Wow.
So with the exception of the mechanic and the Solarian, I wrote pretty much all of the options for all of the core Starfinder classes in COM.
Mm-hmm.
Did a couple of the feats. I did androids, Yosoki, and Sheeran. I did all of the weapons, most of the magic and hybrid items, and I also did, I'm trying to think, I think those are the big things I did. I don't think there was anything. I'm sure there's something, and after we're done the interview, I'm going to hit myself, but those are the big things that, like, those are like my major contributions. I'm very proud of how the various alternate class features came out, especially mm-hmm. Epiphanies for the Mystic is like my
right,
thing
right,
because I was
right.
like, we need to make this into something more customizable.
Mm-hmm.
How? I have an epiphany. We have epiphanies.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's a big contribution, and you get listed as a contributor, but it doesn't like put your name on the bottom of each page or anything, so nobody really knows
nah,
you did. So it's you gotta go out and toot your own horn so people know what parts you did.
Yeah, that's kind of the tough part about being a freelancer, because on one hand you're like, you know, you're right, you don't really, the average fan doesn't really know how much you did, how much you contributed, and or even like how much work needed to go into polishing what you've written, because that,
right.
that has changed for me from project to project too. Some of my my Starfinder writing is pretty good. It usually doesn't need a whole lot of tweaking just because I'm really familiar with Starfinder. But if you compare that to the monsters I wrote in the second edition Bestiary, like that has a lot of polish on it because everything needed polish in that book.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to have a very unified vision from the designers in terms of like what's core.
Right. Now, it sounds like from what you're talking about here that mostly you've done kind of the number crunchy side of things, or have you done a lot of the narrative as well?
I do mostly number crunchy side stuff. I'm I'm very much known for my mechanics.
Right.
I have one Pathfinder Society scenario on my belt. It's under my belt. It's 10-05, I think, is the number. It's called Mysteries Under Moonlight, Part mm-hmm. 1, A Testament of Souls. I also have an article in the back of Tyrant's Grasp, number 3. I got to write the Relics of Last Law section, mm-hmm. which sounds like it would be mostly mechanics. But how it works out is, like, every relic is about a page, and every relic gets, like, I think it's, like, 300 words of, like, mechanics, and then 400 words of, like, flavor and, like, world history and, like, where the relic is. So I consider that one a lot more flavor writing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, mostly a lot of my body of work has been mechanics-based for Paizo.
Now, is that, have you self-selected into that? Have you been pigeonholed into that? Is that, do you want to go back and forth? I'm kind of curious because you see, you know, both sides of it in the various things that, you know, types of mm-hmm. writing you can do for them. And so I'm kind of wondering where you come down on that.
I would very much like to do more flavor, and I want to get better at writing adventures. To me, I feel like the adventure writing is something that I need to work on just because mm-hmm. I can do it. I actually wrote one for my own company. It's called Yuletide Terror. It's a holiday adventure where mm-hmm. In first edition, you play as a bunch of heroes who need to weather out a blizzard by babysitting a bunch of kids during the holidays, and bad stuff happens. And I've also, like I said, I've written a Pathfinder Society scenario. I can do it, but it takes me a lot more time and effort and energy to, like, make a adventure than it does for me to write mechanics. I can sit mm-hmm. down and pump out, like, 2 pages of mechanics in, like, a couple hours. But an adventure, like, it'll take me, like, an hour to do 1,000 words, which it frustrates me. And that you only get better at writing as a freelancer by doing. So I would like to, but... when you get really good at something, people tend to want the thing you're really good at. I think that's true in pretty much any creative aspect. Nobody went to Van Gogh and asked Van Gogh to make sculptures. that's sort of the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. And you almost need to get your skills to a point where they are sellable on your own before you can pitch them to somebody big like Paizo. And that's kind of what I'm working on.
Right, cool. Kind of along those lines, you're also running a third-party publisher. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So my third-party publishing company was originally called Everyman Gaming. It was named after my blog when I was doing my blog. The idea was is that when I switched from No Direction, from having my own blog to being part of No Direction, I wanted to keep the name for recognition from my fans, and I wanted to start doing products too. I had written a rule set for basically taunting, like in an MMO, taunting NPCs, because it really frustrated me how, like, you could play a defensive character, but you couldn't really make the enemies attack you, which meant that your defenses might not be valuable if they just went for somebody else.
So I
wrote a rule set that lets you basically use social skills to taunt things and, like, make them fight you. And I wanted to self-publish that. I actually tried to get another company to publish it, and they told me at the time that they didn't think that it had a widespread appeal to their fans. So I was like, all right, well, I have confidence in this, so I'm going to do this on my own. And I founded the company. My first product was called Psychological Combat, which was that rule set. And it was pretty popular. It was popular enough that it was like, all right, well, I'm going to keep doing this. And now here I am 5 years later, and I've outlasted the company that told me that they didn't think my product had that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
I ended up changing my company's name last year. I don't know how long in the future people are going to listen to it. So it would have been 2018 mm-hmm. or 19. Yeah, 19 this year. I changed it from Everyman Gaming to Everybody Games. I had a bunch of fans who told me they didn't think that my company name was very inclusive. And after hearing what they had to say, I agreed with them. So I changed it formally on most avenues. Every now and then, the name crops up as being in the wrong place in some places. But I'm working to fix it as I find them. It's surprisingly hard to have a company name for 3 or 4 years and then just change it completely. but I'm working on it.
Yeah, I noticed on the No Direction bio author description, it still has Everyman Gaming on there. So
see, like, there's a lot of places where, like, my personal, like, my account based stuff, like anything that actually involves my company, a lot of it has changed over now.
Right.
But, like, I'm finding there are a lot of places where my personal pages say the wrong thing, and I'm like, no, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, in addition to your own material that you're publishing there, do you accept stuff from other freelancers?
I do. I do hire freelancers. I actually have two different rates that I use. One thing that I do is, like, I offer, hey, you want to work for me? I'll give you 5 cents a word, which is, it's not as high as what Paizo gives, but I'm also, like, one guy doing this by myself. Not making a whole lot of money. So, like, I pay what I can. And five cents a word is kind of average, I'd say, right now. The other one I do is I have one rate that's much lower, but that comes with me, like, doing a really thorough read of your stuff and giving you lots of feedback. And I always give freelancers the option of which one they want. And most of them take the money, especially if they're established. But every now and then I have someone who's like, I don't really want the money. I have a job for that. I want you to teach me how to do this better. Right. And I'm like, all right, well, like, this is what that rate is. It's for me, it's kind of like a combination consultation. And then I also publish your thing so you get out there and get some notoriety.
Yeah.
And I've had some freelancers do it, and most of them have gone on to work for other companies. Two of them are working for Paizo pretty frequently. So it works for some people. I guess it depends on what you want. You know what I mean?
And for folks that are looking to get things published through Everybody Games, are you looking for more flavor stuff? Are you looking for more number crunchy stuff or some combination there? Should they bring their own? Do you actually have stuff you're developing?
Well, when what I used to do is I used to say to people, hey, you know, like that I liked working with and like I would do a lot with, I would schedule them out a long time in advance and like give them schedules. And a lot of times that just ended up being too much for both of us. Like, I don't have the capacity as a small one-person publishing company to like schedule you out for a year.
Right.
And you don't want to remember something that I asked you to give me a year ago.
Yeah.
So like a lot of times what I do is I just kind of operate on under the assumption now that I just need to do everything by myself. Sometimes I get like people who message me and say, hey, I'm going to do this for you. And I'm like, okay, sure. And I can either offer them something that's on my plate that I already have planned to do, or sometimes, like, if people have pitches, they can give me pitches, and I will absolutely accept pitches. I am not somebody who thinks that they have all the best ideas of what to sell, and if I think that your idea sounds good, I'll absolutely publish it. Usually what ends up happening is someone will message me, I'll say, cool, and then, like, usually somewhere between 2 weeks and a month is when, like, after, like, the date that they turn it in is when it'll come out. It just kind of depends on what my schedule looks like at the given time.
And how much have you actually published since you've been running that? How many items do you have on there?
Oh gosh, that is a question that is very difficult. I tried to do a like list of all my works, and I think it's over, I know it's over 75 for Paizo.
Yeah.
So for my own company, it's probably a couple hundred.
Yeah.
Two, maybe three. Because I do a lot. I've been doing a weekly, with some exceptions of like vacations and stuff, I've been doing a weekly product every year for about 2 years now.
Yeah. So
all
it's
hard.
All the things that but, you're posting weekly on Facebook then end up as products as well, I'm guessing? Like I see these weekly posts for things.
Everything that I post on Facebook is a product.
Wow. Yeah. That's very prolific then. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for people who are interested in getting writing, started writing or publishing?
Well, I think the first thing that people should know when they want to get started in writing is that it's very tough to make writing your primary career. So
if
you want writing to be your... and I say this as somebody who writing is not their primary career. I do it basically as a part-time job. So if you want to be a writer full-time, you need to kind of take a look at the industry. You need to pick what you want and where you want to be. And you need to set yourself realistic goals to get you there. Like if your goal is, I want to be hired by Paizo in the next 5 years, it's like, great. So how are you going to get there? Like, what kind of steps are you going to take? And how are you going to survive in the meantime? What are you going to do if a job doesn't open up? Because like when you're a freelancer, Paizo is never going to not need freelancers. That is the nature of the engine that we work in. But if you want a full-time developer's gig, well, those are hard to come by and it's pretty rare for people to leave, which means you're banking on Paizo getting big enough that they have to hire more people. And that might not be something that's really reasonable as like a long-term goal. But what you can do is you can choose like, okay, well, I want to be able to get the skills that I need in order to write a Starfinder Society scenario. And then from there, I want to work on and getting the skills I need to be published in a core rulebook. And then after I get published in a core rule book, I want to work on the skills I need to maybe write my first adventure path volume. And like, if the adventure path volume is your goals, you need to look at what other people who do write adventure path volumes are doing and what types of skills they develop. For example, if you wanted to be an adventure path volume writer, you should probably listen to any interviews out there that are done by Kate Baker, because is an amazing writer, and the level at which she went from being like a society scenario writer, which is kind of like entry position for Paizo, to like top tier adventure path volume writer is astounding. Like, I am impressed every day by Kate Baker, and like, basically, people who have done the climb are the people who know how to do it, right? You know, you follow the foot trails that they leave you. And for writing mechanics, which is what I feel most comfortable talking about, the real thing you need to do is you need to make sure that you're analyzing the things that are actually getting published. It's great to have your own ideas, but ideas in any industry are really, really cheap. Anybody can generate an idea. Where true skill comes in is taking that idea and making it into a workable product. So you're going to want to study what Paizo is actually publishing, what other companies are actually publishing. You want to study the word choices they use, the mechanical choices they use, and you want to understand what different mathematical decisions they made and why they made those decisions. Because those will tell you information about the underlying rule set of like whatever system you're trying to write for. And those rules are going to look different compared to Starfinder, to Pathfinder 2nd Edition, to Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, to Fantasy Age. Every system has its own set of rules, and as you become a designer and you become more fluent in one system, you'll start to learn how to pick out information in other ones. But you need to get that first entry step. It's sort of like how it's easier to learn your third language or your fourth language compared to your second language.
Wow, yeah, it sounds like actually a pretty big undertaking for somebody who really wants to, you know, if you want to be a full-timer, that's hard. I was there Tuesday and doing some interviews at Paizo. And, you know, one of the things that we were chatting, they said, you know, there are fewer game developers in the world than there are NBA players. So you think about the rarity of those positions. And then, as you mentioned, kind of the longevity, you know, to realistically gain one of those slots is really tough. You know, I play with Ron Lundeen, and you know, he got an offer there, and it's like, you know, he was a lawyer, had a really kind of good profession, and he had to make the decision. This is one time probably in his lifetime that he'll have this opportunity. Does he jump on it or not? And he'd been working in that area, you know, writing and developing on his own for like 20 years, you know? So it's not only a complicated process, it's a long process. And so many times we see people that want to jump in and get further along. And, you know, sometimes you have outliers where Kate has been very prolific in a relatively short time period. But I think for the most part, it's years. It's years to build up to that kind
Absolutely.
Of level. Yeah.
Well, I think from what I know in Paizo, I would say the biggest outlier is probably Mark Seifter, because Mark Seifter went from, like, I published one thing to I am a developer at Paizo. And, like, the average person is not Mark Seifter. Do not assume that you could do what he did.
Right.
Like, Mark Seifter did a lot of things right at the right time. And, like, it's impossible to know what those conditions are going to be and whether or not you're going to be able to get it. So, you know, my advice to new people is to be realistic about what you're trying to do. And, you know, to anybody who's listening to this, the number one thing that you can do to, you know, expand that, if you want to see the tabletop industry grow, you got to support it. Like, one of the things that happens all the time is, like, you hear about pirating sites that are devoted to, like, troving PDFs and, like, giving them out to people. Like, if you don't support the people who are making the products that you like, they're not going to be able to afford to keep making the things you like. And I get that, like, people like free things, and books are expensive, and it kind of stinks to buy a digital thing that, like, you can't actually hold, or, you know, maybe that doesn't feel like it has value to some people. But man, oh man, if people aren't getting paid for the work they're doing, they're going to stop doing the work. It's simple behavioral, you know, analysis, behavior analysis. Like, nobody's going to do something that they're not being rewarded for. So, well,
and it makes it harder for publishers to stay in business too, which is even a bigger issue. Yeah.
And it's, but what makes it really tough is, like, you have, you see people who see company names like mine or Owen's, and they're like, wow, I've seen so many of these products. They must be this big company. They're not going to be hurt much if I, if I torrent this PDF. It's like, dude, I am one person. My net intake for Everyman Gaming is probably less than your monthly salary.
Right,
please don't steal from me.
Mm-hmm. So Alex, what's next for you? What's the future hold?
Well, right now for actual freelancing work, my big project that just got announced, I was actually announced being on it by John Compton, is I'm in Starship Operations Manual.
Right.
I can't talk much about that. I'm under NDA. But what I can say is that what we've done in two waves, and in the first wave, myself and two other freelancers pretty much wrote the whole book. I wrote as much in that book as I did for Calm, 24,600 words.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to Calm being my baby, what we're calling Psalm will be my baby too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited for it. I wrote lots of very neat things, some of which are actually being light teased on Twitter when people are talking about things that are like in testing and being play tested. So it's like really fun to watch that process of people actually developing the stuff I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I also have it wasn't formally announced yet. I had something coming out from Paizo that I'm really excited about that works towards one of the goals that I said I had. So if you want to rewind the episode and listen again to see if you can figure out what I might be coming from Paizo, I will say that it is not an Adventure Fast volume. But something that I'm really excited about is coming, and I'm actually working on writing it right now.
Very cool.
And then for Everybody Games, right now I'm working on keeping up with second edition. We're already putting out my files for Everybody products.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing Starfinder products. I want to launch a Kickstarter in probably late January or early February. I have an ongoing Starfinder line called the Occult Skill Guide that is involved with making like sci-fi occultic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do a compendium / expansion, a book called The Advanced Occult Guide, and I just got the cover art for it, and it's great. It's Ghostbusters parodies, and I love it. It's so wonderful. So I'm going to do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, who'd you have do the art for you?
I had Jacob Blackman.
Yeah.
I have Jacob Blackman do all of my art for my Starfinder line, because I think that his art has like a really kind of like retro 80s vibe to it, and that's sort of the Starfinder flavor that I want, like that sort of like almost like John Carter from Mars-ish look. I really like that.
And,
I like his colors and that style. I use a more like painted art style for like the fantasy stuff, but for the sci-fi stuff, I think that old-timey comic book look looks really cool, and I like it. And I know that you like it too, because this podcast uses his art.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you recommended him, and he did a fantastic job. And we'll probably commission him to do a little bit more as kind of we continue to grow.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. I enjoy seeing Jacob Blackman get work, and I know that he enjoys getting work.
Yes.
And then I have one other thing coming out. This one is, it should be announced by the time this podcast went live. I'm working with Jefferson J. Thacker, Owen Casey Stevens, and BJ Hensley. BJ is the vice president of Lone Wolf and the publisher of Playground Games.
Mm-hmm.
And Owen Casey Stevens is Owen. And I think Param also needs no introduction. And we're doing a new podcast called RPG Design Club, where we're each taking a major RPG design project that we have and that we're working on, and we sort of talk about industry insights on how to publish in the tabletop role-playing game industry. And let me tell you, like, we're still in like the early recording stages right now, but it is fantastic. We each have a long-term project that we're working on, and my long-term project is called the Eversaga role-playing game. I'm making my own role-playing game for Everyman Gaming called Eversaga, and I'm excited to talk more about that as time goes on. It's kind of like a modern fantasy role-playing game, sort of, but so I know when people hear modern fantasy, they think of D20 Modern.
Right.
I don't think that was fantastic enough, and I think that's a good idea of what my pitch might look like.
Okay.
If you could imagine a world where you have a fantasy role-playing game, and then all of a sudden, like, computers and cars and other artifacts of modern technology just sort of randomly start appearing through planar rifts, you got a kind of good idea of where I'm going.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, I had kind of heard a little bit about that. So that now that you flesh it out a little bit more, that sounds really exciting. I think that should be something that gets a lot of interest amongst folks trying to kind of learn about the underworkings of the machine out there. So,
yeah, I'm hoping so. One of the things that I want to do is, because as I get a little closer, is I want to be do like a kind of like a Patreon where like people who want to support the project and, you know, get like exclusive, like early access kind of stuff. Like, hey, look at this stuff I'm writing. Hey, do you want to be alpha testers? Like, you can help support the project, and then I'll support you, supporting you, you know,
right,
kind of thing.
right. Well, that sounds great. I look forward to that.
Those are the things that are on my plate right now.
And the Kickstarter. I think that'll be really cool to see here in the next month or so. So, well.
Yeah. It should be. What I'm hoping to do for it is, like, I've done Kickstarters before. I did one for the Advanced Skill Guide. I've done one for, the Dynastic Races Compendium. I did one for the Grimoire of Lost Souls. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have experience. And one of the things that always trips me up is, like, having too many reward tiers, because then like I inevitably get things mixed up, and then like years later I have someone messaging me, I still haven't gotten this, and I'm like, no. So one of the things I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to keep the reward tiers a little bit more simple, and like hey, here's this one reward tier, you can pick this tier and I'll give you a print on demand voucher for the book and a PDF of it, and it'll be great, you just get all of it. And then like any other tiers will be like management stuff. So like, hey, do you want to have Jacob Blackman draw a picture of your character getting something terrible happening to them?
Yeah.
Sign up for this tier. And so stuff like that is kind of what I'm looking at doing, because I think minimizing the amount of stuff that I have to actually like send to people is going to make their Kickstarter experience better, because I'm terrible.
Yeah, it's a lot of organization that has to go in, the more levels that you have or something like that.
You have to start like a month or two in advance, man. It is intense.
Mm-hmm. Have you had good experiences in the past with the other ones? Have they turned out pretty well?
With Kickstarters?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my Kickstarters have been okay. Like I said, I always get embarrassed when somebody messages me and tells me that I forgot them.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, like the number of people that's happened to is pretty minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I think the trickiest one was the Grimoire, because we did really well with that one. We raised $10,000 for the Grimoire of Lost Souls.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of content that ended up getting added to the Grimoire to produce it was very significant. And we didn't really budget to have freelancers besides me for that one. So that book ended up taking me forever to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why in the future now I usually say, hey, I'm going to have somebody else write this so I don't die.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Well,
me not dying is a major one of my concerns on any project, actually, John.
I think it should be a goal of yours, actually, on top of everything else. You know, it's a long term, probably. You know. Well, Alex, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. You know, I look forward to seeing you again. Hopefully, at PaizaCon this year. Will you be going?
I'm going to try my best to go. Right. Sometimes it's a little tough. I think Gen Con isn't in the cards for me this year, but I really like PaizoCon, so I'm going to try to do PaizoCon.
What about
last year? I lived at the Paizo streaming table with No Direction. And this year, it's a little bit far away, and Param just came back from PAX when we're recording this. So he's not even like thinking about Paizo. He's like, I need sleep.
Yeah. Do you go to Origins, or is that, because that's a little bit closer for y'all?
Yeah. You know what? I've never tried Origins, but I'd be open to it, especially if hotels are cheaper there than they are for Gen Con, because that's sort of what kills you for Gen Con.
Yeah. If you get in, it's actually about the same, I'll be honest.
Oh.
Yeah, if you can
get... Oh, my heart. You stab at me.
Yeah, there's, you know, they had a... Origins just had their opening for... opening, you know, they have an organizer for all the close-by hotels, and it's like they opened it up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and by 7:15, like everything, all the blocks were, you know, I was trying to get in, everything's already filling up.
Gosh.
And it's crazy. So I got a place that's like just a little bit further away, so it's like half a block away from where Paizo does their stuff, and it wasn't bad. But is the further along you go, the more expensive they are. Now sometimes there's a last minute release. It's probably not, you can probably get a place cheaper closer to Origins than you can to Gen Con. So it's not as scary as that, but it's like, I went to Origins for the first time last year and, or this year, I guess. And it's a nice mix of like PaizoCon and Gen Con, where you get, a lot of the core Paizo things there, but you get exposure to a lot of other games, but it's not this overwhelming size that you have of Gen Con and massive people.
Yeah, Gen Con is really, let me tell you, like, I'm a person, I'm what I like to call a social introvert, where like, I am really sociable, as you can tell, and I'm really good at being around people and like being entertaining, but I have a battery.
Right, right.
The people that are around me, the faster that battery goes down, and as soon as my battery is done, like, I am a zombie. So like, the idea of Gen Con but smaller really does appeal to me, let me tell you. People have to look into that. Definitely, if not this year, probably the following year. I'm setting myself with some hard goals in regards to Everswaga this year. I live in Philadelphia, so my plan is to try to have a working prototype of the game by next PAX Unplugged. So, because I live in Philadelphia, like I mentioned, so I should be able to like take the game and like play test it with some people that I don't know, because I think the blind play test with people who have no idea who I am is probably the best way to do anything. But I don't get players who don't want to hurt my feelings because if they know who I am. Right. I'd rather have someone completely tear me apart because they have no idea who I am or what I.
All right, Alex. Well, I'm going to wrap up the recording at this point. Thanks again.